Welcome back to the Columbia Space Nature Podcast. What's the name of the podcast, Henry?
This is Rocket Science.
This is Rocket Science. My name's David Tibbetts.
And my name is Henry Minelski.
I'm the rock scientist.
I am the rocket scientist. Are we ready to do this whole thing?
It's episode two. Or four. Or two. It's been a mess getting into production. Let's get a topic in today's episode. Space colonization. Alright, so of course, the first question that comes when we talk about colonization is, why should we colonize? What's the point?
That's a good question. There's many reasons people have thought of to colonize other planets, but probably the biggest one of them is that we're either a multi-planet species or we're a single planet species, and if we're a single planet species, we're sort of just waiting for an asteroid or another apocalyptic event to just end humanity.
I believe it was Stephen Hawking that said that as soon as humanity colonizes a second planet, we become an immortal species. Now, I don't know how true that holds up when we consider the Fermi paradox and stuff, but for the most part, if we have two entire planets, our odds of survival are much greater. Especially considering things like climate change, global warming stuff, it is presenting a threat to us right now in the modern day.
Nuclear weapons, that sort of.
Exactly. There's so much stuff that can go wrong on a global level that justifies having several planets. If one of them's lost, humanity still goes on. Mm-hmm. And that being said, let's talk about, you know, we got so many problems on Earth, but why should we spend money going to space? Why don't we just solve the problems here?
It's a good question. I went to a Neil deGrasse Tyson talk, and one of the things that he mentioned was there was a poll done of U.S. citizens, and the poll question was, what do you think NASA's budget is as a fraction of the total U.S. government?
Oh, isn't it like 0.6%?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's 0.49. So the poll was done, and the average guess was 16%. So people thought that NASA was 16% of the federal budget, and it's 0.49% of the federal budget.
Pennies for NASA.
Pennies for NASA. So NASA gets about $21 billion every year. Yeah, that's nothing. The Department of Defense gets $650 billion. Yeah.
Elise, you have a question for us.
Yeah. Why don't we just cut military... I say we like I'm American. Why don't we just cut military budget and then put it towards space? Because once you're in space, who gives a who controls Earth? You control space.
Space Force!
Space Force.
The last two that answered themselves. The Space Force.
That's a good point. I don't want to get too political. I don't know how political we can get.
I mean, it's our podcast as much as we want to, but...
Yeah, I don't want to be fine.
That being said, we don't want to start any problems. That is a question of budget spending. Americans tend to love their military, so we're not going to ever see a big military cut, I don't think. That being said, the Space Force does exist, and hopefully, I mean...
It does exist, like, as of currently?
Wrong.
The proposal has been, like, approved.
Oh, no. It's been approved.
What?
Yeah, the proposal for space.
Congress would have to sign off a new branch to the military. Oh, no, because he's the commander-in-chief. Continue.
Anyways, the Space Force is looking as like it's going to be a thing. And regardless of whether or not you approve or disapprove of Trump, hopefully we can see big things come out of the Space Force. Hopefully we can see a lot more money going into space technology and space development.
Hopefully. But there's been a lot of promises over the years, especially in space, that have gone nowhere. Like Mars.
Yeah, Mars has been a huge... Well, we definitely have... We got, you know, rovers on Mars. We've been doing some research, but not to the same scale that we could be seeing. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd love to see Curiosity come out of U of A, but, yeah. There's a lot of great geology stuff coming out of the Curiosity rover, because they have a lot of devices on there to analyze the rocks.
And the Mars 2020 rover is going to have similar instruments. So there's one specifically that's about seismology on Mars. It's built by some British team, but it's like a seismometer that they're going to measure earthquakes with, or Mars quakes.
All right, so Henry, we talk about different objectives for colonization. We think of the moon, Venus, Mars. Why haven't we gone back to the moon?
Well, I think, so, the only reason we went to the moon in the first place, the only reason we went to the moon in the first place was because of the Cold War. and there was this large political will around going to the moon. We haven't really seen, until maybe very recently, a resurgence of a similar political will. So when you look at it through that lens, it makes sense why we haven't come back to the moon. At the same time, technology has gotten so much better that we could do it so much cheaper, so much faster than we could in 1969, but it doesn't really look like we're on track to do that. I mean, we're going to talk about later something called the Space Launch System, which is NASA's next big rocket and project, sort of a gateway mission to bring us to the moon, to bring us to Mars. Right now it's something like 10 years behind, and it's billions of dollars over budget. There was a report actually last week, Boeing, the contractor specifically, has been like super wasteful. So there's lots of promises, but they don't really seem to go very far, sadly, at least in the public sector.
That being said, of course, we see lots of things that are promised that never come around. And colonization seems to be like one of those things. It is kind of a quasi-promise. We always talk about it. We always think it's going to happen. Will it happen in our lifetime?
I'm going to say yes. So, it depends on the scale that you're talking about. If you mean that there's going to be a self-sustaining colony of hundreds of thousands of people on Mars by the time we die, sometime like 2070, 2080, I'm going to say no. I don't think there will be. However, I think there is very, very likely to be a research base or like a small colony.
So, Bruce Henry, you think that we will see it within our lifetime, so assuming that we don't die a premature death.
It's very morbid.
Very morbid. Anyways, obviously we're not going to see it tomorrow. There's still a lot of steps that humanity has to take before we can even colonize
mm-hmm.
anything, for any purpose, whether it be huge or a small research base. What's left for us?
What's left?
What's left for us? What challenges remain
before
we can actually consider colonizing something?
So one of the big ones is the health aspect. So the International Space Station has been around for like 19 years, something like that. The 20th anniversary is coming up pretty soon. And we've put a lot of astronauts up there and sort of explored the health effects of going into space. And we've noticed a few things. Probably the biggest one is what happens to your muscles and bones. You lose a lot of muscle mass, a lot of bone mass, because you never use your muscles. You're floating around weightless. There's a bunch of other health problems that could arise from going to places like Mars. In particular, radiation. So here on Earth, we have this great big magnetic field. We have the Van Allen belts, and this basically shields us from like 99.99% of all of the incoming radiation from the sun.
Henry, I'd like to stand here and quote my good man Bill Wirtz and say, "The sun is a deadly laser."
Sun is a deadly laser. And as soon as you exit Earth's magnetic field, you expose yourself to a lot of ionizing radiation from the sun. That radiation could ionize the atoms in your cells and cause mutations, which are a big problem, things like cancer. If the sun has a coronal mass ejection, which is like this huge storm that could happen, it could cause even acute radiation poisoning. So like you'd be exposed to if you went near a malfunctioning nuclear power plant. So super dangerous. Also, there could be ionizing radiation coming from supernova far away from the sun. So from exploding stars light years away. So a lot of dangers.
We have a question from the live studio audience.
So you're saying not only could I go to space, I could also become Wolverine?
You literally stole my question.
That's not what I'm saying, but it's also not what I'm not saying.
Oh God.
Leave that in.
Yeah, we can leave that in.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Anyways, obviously there's several options when it comes to where we can colonize. The first thing that come to mind, of course, the moon, Mars.
Venus.
It's gonna be the moon or the Mars, honestly.
Probably.
Venus presents its own issues that are beyond what we could even expect from the moon and Mars.
However, there is some interesting ideas. For example, there's... Oh, we have a question from the live studio audience.
Yes.
What if we... What is there a talk of building a space station that could house colonies?
Go back to episode one.
Oh. Yeah, that's episode one territory.
Okay.
Yeah, it's episode one. We talked about structures in space.
Mm-hmm. Aliens.
We did talk about that. Yeah, we did.
Yeah, that was the whole episode.
I don't really remember, to be honest. Another question from the audience.
We can build them on Europa, but before we do that, can we rename it America?
And that's a cut.
We'll cut that. I like that you know what Europa is, though. That's great.
You're welcome.
Is that a moon of Jupiter?
Yes. This is amazing. People like are knowing things.
I think we should leave it in, though.
Iowa is another moon, right?
Iowa?
Iowa.
Yes,
Iowa.
Iowa, yes.
That's my favorite moon.
It's the nearest
moon.
Yeah,
Iowa is my neighbor.
Not Calypso, Callisto. Yeah, and what's the fourth
one? Yeah,
if you're
listening to this.
The fourth Galilean moon?
Please don't stab me.
Shut up.
Come on, come on.
It
starts with a G.
God. Magnifico!
Ganymede.
I see the silhouette of a moon.
Rip.
3 out of 3 moons.
Scum.
Well, 3 out of 4.
Alright, Henry.
Okay, this is gonna require some really.
Sorry,
heavy
I can't count. I'm in CC.
So, Henry, of what are we gonna consider kind of the main two options, the moon and Mars?
Mm-hmm.
Which do you prefer?
Ooh, which do I prefer? Both. Be great.
Well, obviously, but rather,
yeah.
Which one do you prefer we colonize first?
Colonize first? Probably the moon. There's way less logistical challenges. So the moon's like about 3 days away. Mars could be up to 7 months away. So communication's hard, getting supplies there is hard. Leaving the orbit of the Earth to go to Mars takes a lot more fuel. So your rocket would therefore be a lot heavier. Carry a lot more fuel and therefore be a lot more expensive, which would be super annoying. There's probably more resources on Mars, but it might not be worth it in terms of the journey time. So,
what are the resources on Mars that are different from the moon?
There's a lot of CO2, for example, that we could use that's in the atmosphere. There's way more ice.
Rocks.
There's way more ice.
Is there also
on the poles? That's a meme that we could keep in there.
Free real estate? Technically no, because of the space treaty, but...
Yeah.
Space treaty. Laws.
Go back to episode one.
Yeah, that's in episode one.
And also about the resources of Mars. Go back to episode one that was lost.
The last episode.
My choice for which one we colonize would also be the moon. That out, because especially having a colony on the moon, some sort of base on the moon, rather what I see, like we talked in episode one, to connect back to the first episode, it allows us so much more mobility within space. It'll give us, you know, access to actually be able to perform space mining operations, to build a starport, to build larger spaceships, such that we could transport a body of people to Mars if we wanted to colonize that.
Mm-hmm.
I think, obviously, a colony on Mars has a lot more value.
Theoretically,
if we had resources already made to choose either one, you'd pick Mars. But realistically, we have to go to the moon first.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think that we're ever going to want to put a 100,000 civilian colony on the moon, just because there's not really a lot of lot of resources there to justify that, unlike Mars. That being said,
we could talk about Venus. I mean, if we... So the moon and Mars are the two main ones, but there is a few concepts that NASA has put together for having a colony on Venus, which sounds super weird because it has something like 100 times the atmospheric pressure of sea level. On top of that, it's hot enough to melt lead. So that's not ideal if you are on the surface. So planting a flag on the surface is never going to happen. But If we went somewhere like 60 kilometers in the atmosphere, you could have a cloud city pretty easily.
Just like Star Wars.
There would be one atmosphere of pressure, so you could walk around, although, you know, sulfuric acid would kind of be an issue. There would be enough atmosphere above you such that you'd be protected from radiation. Also, it's way closer than Mars's, so it's easier to get to. But you could only hang out in the atmosphere. So, question from this?
So, because versus the floating cloud city or a structure in space, the only benefit for being on Mars would be the protection from radiation?
There actually isn't even that much protection from radiation on Mars.
So what's the benefit of doing it on Venus versus just floating out in space or orbiting the Earth?
I mean, there's some resources. There's science that you could do in the atmosphere. But yeah, I don't see I don't see the justification for a full-scale colony on Venus.
If the Russians try to do it first.
Well, of course. Gotta keep their standards.
All right, so these specifics. So who's going to be the first people to do it? Right now, it looks like it's a race between NASA and SpaceX. So NASA, I talked about it previously, NASA has the SLS, the Space Launch System. Basically, it's just a bunch of old hardware that used to be on the shuttle that they're repurposing to make what's called their Orion capsule, which they could send people to Mars in. The problem is that there's far less in terms of payload than SpaceX's big Falcon rocket, BFR. And also that NASA's timeline gets pushed back chronically and doesn't look like it's going to be doing anything.
How does Space Force change the calculation between SpaceX and NASA?
As of right now, it doesn't, because the Space Force
True,
doesn't
Space
really...
Force's mission is more
what
just like orbital defense.
So the Space Force is a proposed, and I guess now sort of quasi-approved branch of the U.S. military that operates in space.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, yeah.
Space Force.
So you know like the Air Force?
Space Force.
Yeah.
Space. Wow.
Space
Force.
Yeah.
They kind of just want to like, they kind of just want to have a military presence up in space. Not so much like the Moon and Mars and stuff, but rather orbiting the Earth. Such
mm-hmm.
that you could do ICBM interception, or you could stop someone from messing up your satellites.
Yeah, it's just
a bunch of really niche concerns.
A bunch of very irrelevant concerns.
Hey!
I'm not here to talk about its relevance, but if we get some good tech out of it, if we get some good tech out of it, I won't complain.
Yes, the benefit to the atrocity.
There are like billions of dollars of military hardware currently in space. So there's like part of the Air Force, there's a Space Command. So the proposed Space Force would basically change the Space Command into its own Space Force. So hypothetically, it's not like there's going to be more funding going into the military, because all the functions that were previously part of the Air Force are now going to be done by the Space Force. So I don't think it's a waste of resources, theoretically. And there are billions of dollars of assets that kind of need to be protected in space. But at the same time, like, if it's horrifically overfunded just because it's the military, or if we start doing crazy things with nukes in space, yeah, it would not be good.
We have a question from the audience.
So, when you say space colonization,
mm-hmm.
the first thing that comes to mind is for the space level.
Classic.
Yeah.
Was there a question?
Do you think that's a feasible thing?
Well, in my experience in playing Spore, it's more of an interstellar type of colonization. And currently, given the sort of physics-based constraint that we can't travel faster than the speed of light, there is no way that we're going to colonize a planet in another solar system or another star system anytime soon. Like, we're talking millions of years timescale to colonize. And so the major issue with that is that you can't get from one star to the other within your lifetime. So then you need like a colony ship, which is, it's kind of sketchy. Like if you had a ship where, like a generation ship, where like, the people who left Earth knew that they were going to die before reaching their destination, but they were going to have kids. And then their kids would die.
And a prerequisite to that would definitely be a starport. Like an orbital platform, either on the, either orbiting Earth or an actual base on the moon. Such that you could build such a large ship and not have to get it out of the atmosphere.
We have another question from the live studio audience.
Actually, no, it's just a fun fact. If the sun was the size of a grapefruit and it was sitting on our campus in Manhattan, the closest star would be in Los Angeles. Stars are far away. That's the point. For like
very
years,
far
you
away.
Know, it'd be like
so,
that.
In sport, you use black holes to travel from one place to another.
We just have a lecture about black holes.
Do
black holes
actually
let
you travel?
No.
I'm not saying they do, but I'm also not saying they don't.
Interstellar.
No, that's wrong. Technically, there's no way for us to know yet because we haven't done it. But
in theory.
But also, like
fundamental physics kind of says no.
Fundamental physics says that long before you reach the singularity, or the center of the black hole. Your entire body would be stretched into a string of atoms. It's called spaghettification. So you'd be very, very dead. So some crazy hypothetical wormhole physics, your atoms could end up somewhere else in the universe. You're dead. You're definitely dead. So I don't know how.
You know what? Long story short, we don't know.
But
I'm not saying it doesn't.
It's kind of plausible. Create a wrinkle in like the time-space continuum.
No.
No?
Well, okay, so it would
Why
create
would it?
It would create a hole in space-time.
No.
However, the universe is not curved enough as a whole such that you would expect to be put somewhere else in the universe.
Oh.
If space-time was for some reason very curved, if we could create negative energy, for example, which doesn't exist, then you could hypothetically create a wormhole. But right now, there's no way that we could do it.
Because spaghettification would kill you.
Yeah.
That's right.
But would it put you back together in the same order on the other side? Would you just be a spaghetti forever?
Well, if you get put back together on the other side, like, that brings up a whole, like, philosophical question, right? Like, are you the same person? No, right?
No.
Yeah.
No.
No.
If it puts you back together in the exact same order?
Yeah, but isn't your stream of consciousness then ending?
There's a very, very famous old philosophical dilemma about this. It's like if you have an old Greek ship, right, and you take out each board
the ship
one
of
by
Thies.
One. Something like that. Honestly,
yeah.
Greek names confuse me. But you replace each board one by one.
But,
oh,
we'll
God damn
it. We'll just bleep it.
We'll bleep it. But you replace each board one by one, right? It's not the same ship as when you first got it, right? That's why you also can't be, that's why I wouldn't trust having my brain uploaded into the Matrix. It's because, like, it wouldn't be the same you. I mean, it might be a copy of your brain, but
with
your
all the
consciousness
memories,
would have been evaporated.
It won't be
so.
You.
All right,
but
speaking of the Matrix, we have a question from Kate.
But
what
segue
was that?
Okay, actually, all right,
fine.
I'm
gonna answer
you. No. Two things.
They did
okay.
do that in Cat. They
uploaded like,
the consciousness of the doctor who.
Hey,
was
Lise.
Black Mirror.
Probably.
Yeah, that was a cool episode. No, but I was saying potentially, could you create a probe that like held a very small neutron star in the center so that when you throw the probe into the black hole it holds itself together because it's a neutron star that's like almost a black hole, so just like the force kind of like combats each other so that the probe could work.
I feel like throwing a neutron star into a black hole would do lots of really crazy that we would not anticipate. So I don't know if we could necessarily predict whether it would hold with tension. Also, neutron stars are huge in terms of their mass. Like they have, like
we
can't just like throw them around.
But it's relatively fine. There's size in like Manhattan.
Yeah, but they're like the mass of Earth.
That's true.
So
well, also like I was thinking about probe, and I was thinking, oh, it could send us signals. Like wait, no, the black hole's gonna absorb every single signal.
Yeah. And also, like, as you approach the singularity itself, there's so much that we don't understand. Like, all of fundamental physics breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, even atoms would be ripped apart. So, like, I don't know if, like, a macro-sized anything.
Work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be cool,
you
though.
You throw a black hole at a black hole.
Then you'd create a gravitational wave.
I have a question!
Go ahead, Lise.
What if we threw an atomic bomb at a black hole?
No.
It's so insane.
What would happen? Because that's what they did in Avengers.
True.
What, they did?
Well, no.
That's
that
actually
black hole,
not
like,
Avengers.
Yeah, no, not at all. Because it went through a wormhole. So, like, it came out the other side. Like, a black hole would just rip a nuke. Like, I don't even know. Like,
it'd be spaghetti uranium 238.
Yes.
But what if it exploded before it got spaghettification?
Well, then it would just be in a black hole and, like, absolutely nothing would happen.
It'd be like if you nuke the sun. Who cares?
It's like if you, like, poke
the sun
a bear
is just
literally.
A nuke, yeah.
The sun is just an infinite nuke.
What?
Why would it care if it's, like, slightly more nuke?
Yes.
Like the sun.
And limited amount of nukes.
Huh.
This is such a tangent, oh my god.
Speaking of tangent, it's like we just had a derivative or something.
Oh my god.
Oh!
Wow.
No, that is...
That makes no sense.
Just because
yeah.
It's math related, you can make a joke.
Yeah, the derivative's the tangent line.
No!
Yeah.
The derivative is a completely different function.
The tangent line, a point.
Actually, it's the slope of the tangent line, that's a neck.
Let's just integrate it back into the main argument.
Oh.
That one
worked. That one was good.
That worked really well.
That was
so
really
good.
That was so good.
I'm gonna put that in there like out of context.
Just the opener, just.
Can you cut out my like failure of a joke?
No, but mine won't make sense.
No, you have to keep it in.
Make for context. Yeah.
I see we take one more question from the live studio audience.
Make it a weird one.
So y'all ever seen the amazing motion picture, Journey to the Center of the Earth?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, what if Mars has one of those?
No.
Okay.
Wait, Mars has a Journey to the Center of the Earth?
Yeah, well, no, not like the movie, but like the center of the Earth, right? And all the dinosaurs
Mars
are
is
alive
Earth.
There, right?
Wait, I had no idea that was the plot of the movie.
That was the plot of
the
movie?
They go to the center of the Earth.
Yeah!
Come on!
Yeah, and there's dinosaurs
down there. They go to the center of the Earth.
There's
dinosaurs and pterodactyls.
It's just so
wrong. Out the center
it's
of the Earth.
It's just so unbelievable.
That would be amazing, but no.
Could you imagine if the first life we found on Mars was a dinosaur?
Oh, that would be such.
Well, that's what it had 63 million years to evolve, so...
Guys,
or 65 or 61, it's kind of up in the
beer. Everyone listening to the podcast, the best dinosaurs in New York City are at the Naturalist.
You know,
weird
like,
flex, but okay.
No, like, because then we can all go there together and talk about dinosaurs in space.
Or we can go to the mineral room.
Not
no.
A school.
Huh? At least got in our room. Minerals are far superior to dinosaurs. Paleontology is a joke in comparison to geology.
Whoa.
And leave that in, Henry.
Whenever I think about paleontology, I just think about Ross.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Don't get that.
I love Ross.
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 From Friends.
David Trimmer.
Oh, I've only watched two episodes.
Why
of
does that have to do with paleontology?
He's a paleontologist. That's who he is.
No f.
Watch
so
your mouth.
I didn't realize he had a job.
What?
I didn't realize he was employed.
Yeah,
he's
was,
a professor.
I just thought he was the Ross of the Rachel.
I don't know where. Final question for Micah.
Okay, you know how there are parallel universes, so like,
no.
Everything in our world could be the exact same in another world, except like one thing is different.
Hypothetically.
So if you
sure.
Theoretically think that like our world could be the exact same,
mm-hmm.
except David wasn't a f***ing disgrace. Like everything is the exact same.
I think that's where you stop recording.
Should I leave that in there?
I think you should end it.
Alright guys, well that's been the show. I hope you enjoyed our conversation about colonization of space.
That was only like the first half of the episode. The second half was just
space
stale
colonization,
memes.
That's all we talked about this episode.
Stale memes and bad puns.
Broken
good
dreams.
Jokes about calculus.
Alright,
it's been a good one. I'm your host, David Tibbetts.
And I'm also the host, Henry Minowski.
This is Rocket Science.